This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by BetterHelp.
This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit and look at our beautiful faces as we do it. Everything's a rhyme because I'm on time. All right, let's start the show. Inner Ho Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist, masked up ho who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are she and her.
And me, Rodeca, a fat black, non-monogamous, existentialist femme whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here, and my pronouns are she and her.
And me, Rob, one pansexual, agender, firefighting feminist with a fatty, pronouns they, them, and daddy.
And Akua, pronouns she and her, who's just a frozen New York City popsicle. The bitch is cold.
It do be cold, though. Every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. Guess which one today is? On today's episode, we're talking all about sex budgets. What the fuck is that? And how do you create one of your own? Then single parenting. What are the societal, financial, and romantic and more factors to consider when you take the plunge into child rearing solo, and much, much more.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast and social media, you could do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Pod In so other people can see it.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inner Ho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook, and you can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising, CUMMUNITY, and head out to innerhouseuprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Pay a Ho, or check out merch.
And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, or to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Now we're getting into our segment called Ho of the Week. Hoes of the Week are the people who we shout out who have supported Inner Ho Uprising in the past week. Hoes of the Week always get special nicknames. That is Inner Ho Uprising tradition. And the game, if they choose to participate, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. This week we have Tia Not Tamara, who left us an Apple podcast review, and the review simply wrote, "I love these nakers." And that's the perfect kind of fight. It's short, sweet, it's to the point, and it's funny.
There you go.
And that is what I identify as a maker.
I as well.
Freaking American. Well. We also have an anonymous donator who requests that instead of shouting them out, we shout out Shirley Chisholm or someone else cool.
Wow.
This person paid a hoe. And while I think that you are cool, let's also take a moment to shout out other people who we think are cool in addition to Shirley Chisholm.
Simone Biles.
Simone, I love
She's
Simone
been
Biles.
On my
shout
line
out
like
to Simone Biles.
Since yesterday for some reason. So good energy and vibes. I know it's so random, right? I don't know. Her and Serena Williams. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, okay. So if we're going to shout out Serena Williams, I want to shout out Naomi Osaka.
Yes.
For winning the U.S. Open in the most political way. And also, because her mom let me in the U.S. Open last year. Humble brag, but that was pretty fucking cool. And she used to train on the same park that I train tennis on now. So shout out to Osox. That's our in nickname, Osox. She doesn't know who I am, but I call her Osox.
I'm done.
You guys are friends and she doesn't even know. Okay, got you.
I mean, there's people who listen to this podcast who are like, "Oh yeah, Sam." And I'm like, "Who the fuck are you, nigga?
Never met you in my life."
But I love you anyway. Okay, well, we also have EMC, who became a patron on Patreon, whose nickname is obviously E equals MC squared. Their name is actually EM or M, and their last name is Mick. In case you don't know that I'm talking about you, I just want you to know that. And then we got Bishara P., AKA me and my niggas trying to get at your bish. If you're not black, we're going to have to change that to me and my niggers trying to get at your bish. But that is your nickname. And they became a patron on Patreon. Thank you very much for doing that. If you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname of your own, here are some things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can feature us in an article you've written. You can shout us out on social media. These are all non-monetary ways you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support. And we understand that in these uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks. Please do not spend your last dollars on us. Put you and yours first. That is a command. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. You can purchase the last t-shirt left at innerhouprising.com/merchandise.
And I'll tell you about that limited edition.
Rob promised a black lipstick note. Some other things we're offering? Rodek is going to send you one nootropic pill.
I was about to say, I actually will. I'll throw one pill in there. Not of your choice. It'll be a random pill. You won't know.
Not even identify.
No, just take it and you let me know how you feel. That's it. I will offer that.
Akua, what will you send?
Oh, y'all not getting nothing from me. Don't look over here for nothing.
You get the shirt.
It's a handwritten note from Akua that says, "Nan shit." And that's that. Also, a reminder, if you do become a patron on Patreon, for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any patron tier, you receive access to our episodes a few days early and entry into our workshops and parties, as well as our pre-episode Zoom recordings. For the month of October, I'm highly considering doing Halloween-themed patron-only film nights, so get in on that. Okay, now let's get into a segment that we'd like to call Self-Care Tip of the Week. It is a segment where we give you some tips on how to care for yourself. Today we're talking about sex budgets. What is a sex budget?
We are going to talk about sex budgets. I actually got this idea while binge listening to Bag Ladies, all of their quarantine content from March until August. And on one episode, in which I cannot identify because I was binging, either a Stephanie or Lena, again, cannot identify.
It was a Stephanie, and they were talking about current events in relation to OnlyFans.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And she mentioned having a sex budget. And when I said it, I was like, nigga, that is smart. Why do I not have that? I also don't budget, so that's probably why I don't have that.
Oh, boy.
I just spend all my money and then be broke. I don't know. Nonetheless, if y'all are like me, y'all don't budget, we're gonna get to it. So we're gonna be talking about developing our ability to track and plan our finances as an act of self-care and foundation building, and specifically allocating a sex budget to prioritize our sexual pleasure. Please do not be wary. I'm not gonna sit here and tell you to give up your Starbucks so that you can become a millionaire. That's not what's about to happen here. We understand.
Join an LLC once you stop one cup of coffee a day.
Not gonna happen. So I started this with thinking about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Ooh. And Maslow's hierarchy of
psychological
needs. Maslow's hierarchy of needs is a motivational theory in psychology regarding what Abraham Maslow believed were human needs and desires. And it's often presented as this 5-tier pyramid. The first two levels are our physiological needs, and these are basic biological requirements for human survival. That means breathing, that means food, that means shelter, that means clothes, that means warmth, that means sleep, that means sex. Sex is a basic biological need, y'all.
Oh.
And this is why I'm struggling, because I ain't had none. But so those that is the bottom of the pyramid. Following that is our safety needs, which includes our emotional security, our financial security, ding, 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 such as employment, social welfare, needs for law and order, needs from freedom for fair, social stability, property, health, well-being. So those are the two. As you can see, then there are belonging and love needs and so forth and so forth. We're not going into those. So in our capitalistic society, both our psychological needs and our safety needs are not easily teased apart and can be very dependent. Our physiological needs can be very dependent on our emotional and financial needs. Like, you need money to have food and warmth and clothes, you know. So you need financial security to be able to meet your own, your basic physiological needs, which is just crap. But here we are. And while we work to dismantle the system, because ain't nobody trying to live in capitalism forever, while we're working to dismantle it, we still have to live in it. You know, it's not like we live off the grid. We still live in it as we're trying to work to dismantling it. And budgeting and creating a personal financial plan can be a way to do so, and prioritize meeting your needs. So for general budgeting, oh Lord, words. for general budgeting, if you're like me, I had to look into this, like, how do I create a budget? I know some of our independent dwellers, like Rod and Rob, probably already have budgets because they live on their own. They independently support themselves. But I live with my mama and she still supports me. So
yes, mama.
Yes. Privilege. But nonetheless, for general budgeting, we want to identify and add up all our sources of income. That means your main job, your day job, your OnlyFans, your other side hustles, the money from your sugar daddy, all of it counts. If it's a dollar coming in, you gotta add that towards the pot. Once we figure out how much money you have, we then want to utilize the 50-30-20 system. Mm-hmm. There are other systems of budgeting, including what is called like an envelope budgeting, where you like label different envelopes and put different money towards it. But that actually means like physical cash. And I don't know how many people are comfortable having physical cash on their possessions when we do a lot of banking or cash apping or whatever you do. So the 50-30-20 allows you to organize the flow of income coming out of your bank account, your PayPal, whatever you be using. So with this rule, 50% of your income, after we have allotted all of it, every single dollar and penny is accounted for, 50% of that income is supposed to be allotted to our needs, to rent, food, transportation, the minimum payments on your debt or your student loans, because that's all they get from me.
I was about to say.
And they're lucky to get that.
Forbearance.
Then 30% is to be earmarked for our wants and life pleasures, such as trips and entertainment. And then 20% is to go towards saving as a foundation building kind of thing. If you have a job that provides benefits and a lot of your income is already earmarked to like 401ks and retirement plans, whatever they have, you want to take that into consideration of the 20% because that's already automatically happening for you. If you want to add to that, by all means, but I don't do that either. So, so in that 30%, is where our sex budget lies. It's in that space of life pleasures, of vacations, Netflix and Hulu's, all of that. And you then want to go in for personally and tease apart what that looks like for you. Are you, you know, a wanderlust traveler like Sam who needs at least a trip a year to survive, you know? Or are you me who has a Hulu account and never watches it? You know, what does that look like for you? And what is earmarked in there? And then you want to specifically take some dollars in there and say, this is going towards sex and what that means for sex. So even if that is $30 a month, that can be a set of Savage Fenty lingerie. That can be a new affordable glass dildo or a new sex toy. That could be a new bottle of lube. That can be a subscription to an ethical porn site. That could be a subscription to somebody's OnlyFans. That can be new candle sets for when we want to set the mood. That can be a new spend a night hoe bag because the old one's tethered. You want to prepare for post-pandemic? I don't know. The options are quite endless. That can actually, it can also be, as I'm thinking about it, it can also be saving up to get a night with your favorite sex worker, whoever you follow on Twitter.
I was just thinking that too.
I'm putting this towards the pot because when I get enough, I'm getting me a date, you know. Options are endless.
Down payment on your sex robot.
Yes.
Look at that.
Had to go there.
Look at it. Literally, the options are endless. I didn't even think about that, but same came through. allocating the funds, much like setting time when we're talking about self-care, is the way to be intentional and to prioritize that. And of course, something new, because we always talk about self-care and inexpensive ways to self-care, but sometimes self-care costs money. You know, how much money is up to you? So we don't want to feel guilty about that, but also getting something new, something tangible, is a quick dopamine boost for, you know, for our moods. Like, I love getting something, even if it's a candy bar, I'm excited. Like, especially if somebody gifts it to me, you want to get on my good side, gift me a Snickers bar. We are good.
I love
like
Snickers bars.
I love Snickers bars.
I haven't had Snickers in a while, but they're like,
yeah. So yes, that is how we budget, but specifically we sex budget to prioritize our sexual pleasure. Take that, run with it, have fun. Goodbye.
I like that. I'm not saying nothing for the rest of the episode.
That's it. All I have for y'all.
No, that was really good. Definitely. Thank you for doing that. And even just introducing the concept of budgeting in general, which might be something that people in our most listened to demographic could use at the moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What does your sex budget look like at home? If you do it on your little Excel sheet, send that to us, because I'd like to see what you're spending money on, because I'm nosy.
I was going to say, I'm nosy as fuck. So I want to see them. Let me know what it looked like.
Yeah. I shine bright, and all my different colors, all my different colors, colors. We shine bright, and all our different colors, all our different colors. Brooklyn Tiller, bad girl killer, known as the baddest, ass ain't the fattest, more than my assets, and I still cause a lot of havoc, but I be on peace and positive energy, still living in a world where folks trying to kill me, here I see black women and queer, created all these rules that I couldn't adhere to, resilient, but don't ever fuck with my rights. The more I rise, the more they're trying to bring me down, 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 down. Okay, now let us go on into what we like to call the actual show. We're getting into our topic called Fuck It. It is our topic of the day. And today we are talking about, we're doing a deep dive conversation into the choice to become a single parent or to be a single parent. So we're going to give a content warning for abortion, which is discussed a couple of times during this conversation. This is a conversation that Rob pitched. Rob, tell us about why you wanted to get into it.
I chose this topic because I'm 28 years old. However, I've had HPV 3 times. I've had 2 surgeries. I've had chlamydia 2x. 1 time I had it for a very long time. So if you don't know, chlamydia scars the ovaries if left untreated. And I just had a plethora of vaginal issues that kind of convinced me that I would have trouble conceiving the longer I waited to conceive. And I didn't know if I would find a partner in enough time to be able to do so. I've only accidentally gotten pregnant once. I should have been pregnant 30 fucking times. So it kind of,
yeah, I was like, why are you saying only?
Well, wait, what?
Is there a minimum number that we should all be getting pregnant accidentally?
Well, okay. You know, when you be fucking up, I used to be fucking up, and I don't know. It just never happened ever except 1 time. So even that was kind of a deal breaker for me to wait, because I'm like, if it's not even happening by accident, when typically speaking, statistically, I should have gotten pregnant again. I didn't want to wait for the right person to come along and for them to decide that they want to start a family with me, because that could take a very long time. I'm open to it, but I didn't want my window to biologically conceive a child to pass. Becoming a single parent by choice is something that I've been considering to just do what I really want to do, which is become a parent and just do it on my own and, you know, go with the flow. And I haven't done a lot of research in it because it's still like a thought more than like a plan of action. But, mm-hmm. you know, we were trying to pitch topics and I'm like, you know, this is something that I've heard other people talk about, but I don't know anybody who's actually done it. So I really wanted to talk about it, get you guys' opinions on certain things and see where it goes from there. So a single parent by choice is someone who decides to have a child on their own without a partner. This is typically people with vaginas. All these studies are done with the idea of mothers and women being people with vaginas in mind. So if I refer to women or mothers in like reading a quote from the study, I really just mean people with coochies. But they use intrauterine inseminations, which is sperm inserted directly into the uterus. In vitro, which is artificially inseminating retrieved ovaries with sperm. Embryo transfer, which is transferring an embryo to the uterus. Mm-hmm. And fertility treatments, which is taking certain hormones that allow you to ovulate and produce more eggs so that it'd be easier for you to get pregnant. 11 million homes are single parent homes. However, a lot of them...
In the U.S.?
In the U.S., yes. Let me be specific for my U.K. and German listeners and shit. they exist. But yeah, it's 11 million single parent homes in the U.S. Most of them are headed by single mothers, though. And this was actually, so this is like around 30% of the population in America, but it was 10% in 1970. And I think that accounts for the change in women and people with coochies not marrying their partners because of tradition. As time passed by, people getting divorced more often and not like staying in marriages that they wasn't really fucking with. And then also people deciding to become parents by choice.
Single parents by choice.
Single parents by choice, yes. Solo parents by choice. And with the research that I did, I found... Because one thing that I always thought about was... And the things that were introduced to me by men, I should have known. But things that were introduced to me were, oh, you raising a child by yourself, your child's going to grow up fucked up. Which was wild because a lot of the people saying that were people who grew up in single parent homes. And I'm like, niggas out here, you speak for yourself, nigga.
I know best. Like, I know best.
You just like that because you are you. That has nothing to do with inherently being from a single parent home. And solo parenthood in itself, through studies, doesn't cause psychological problems for children. Studies show that most single parents by choice are women. They're generally well-educated and they have professional occupations and they're usually in their late 30s, early 40s. And the reason for the age is to account for women feeling that their age is increasing, their fertility is declining. So mm-hmm. if they do not find a partner and they don't do it on their own, they literally can't conceive because you cannot conceive just by yourself. You need sperm. But a lot of them prefer to have a baby in a traditional setting, which is with a partner and in a relationship and typically married. However, you know, shit don't be going that way sometimes. And one reason why children of single parents by choice, they have less psychological problems because they have less parental conflict. You know, arguing, divorcing, and then experiencing economic hardship and maternal psychological problems, meaning the mother experiencing psychological problems because of marriage breakdown or single parenthood. And then also, let me read this quote directly because I couldn't phrase it better. The fact that the solo mothers made an active decision to parent alone rather than finding themselves in this situation unintentionally may have contributed to the positive outcomes for these families. Children born by donor insemination to single mothers by choice are extremely wanted children whose mothers went to great lengths to conceive them, whereas divorced single mothers and unmarried single mothers who had unplanned pregnancies did not set out to parent alone. So that usually leads to the child, quote unquote, being more wanted because of the great lengths that the women go through. In some of the articles, I've seen as low as 35,000 and as high as 50,000 because of the failure rate of a lot of these treatments. And because you have to do multiple, it usually doesn't happen on the first one, and they try other treatments. And it is extremely costly. It's usually not covered by insurance. So you're paying out of pocket for all these things to happen, which is why, you know, more of those single parents are in professional occupations, because you have to be able to afford all of that in the first place, which is also probably why most of them are white. These are mostly white women who choose to do this. But that's just a matter of socioeconomical status. One thing that I came across, like a thought that I had, was artificial pregnancies versus adopting. So as of 2018, there were 437,000 children in the foster care system. But I've actually never heard an argument of people who can't conceive or choose not to conceive with men, you know, who choose to do it by themselves, that single parent by choice, versus adopting one of the 437,000 children in foster care. My personal opinion is that a matter of choice, because I know I personally, when I was pregnant, it was like the greatest feeling I've ever had. I can't really explain what it's like to know that you have a life growing inside of you and to know that you are a vessel for that life. So that life is literally of you. And when it comes out, it'll be just a little human, but a human that'll grow up with a personality of its own. And just the idea of that is something that I love, which is why I wanted to conceive a child and not adopt a child. However, there is a stench of guilt because there are so many children without homes who sometimes don't find homes until they grow out of the foster care system. So that's my idea on that. What is you guys' take?
When you initially, like when I saw the question, the first thing I thought was, I know there's a lot more hoops to go through when you're adopting a child. So I like was like, oh, is marital or like being a single parent even like an issue if you're adopting one, as opposed to like making the choice of the artificial pregnancies, and that's a choice you can make on your own. So what I looked up while I was listening, there are marital requirements to adopt outside of the U.S. So that could definitely be a deterrent for a lot of people because they literally can't do
it. What do you mean outside of the U.S.? Like to adopt a child who lives outside of the U.S. or if you're outside of the U.S.?
So it says for international adoptions, marriage requirements will vary depending on the country. So depending on, like, there are some countries that require you to be married in order for you to adopt a child.
What about this country?
For the U.S., it says single parents are asked to name a guardian who would step in as the parent should the adoptive parent be unable to continue to fulfill that responsibility.
Okay.
So while that's technically not, like, some people have that, some people may not. Maybe they're the only person that they depend on, and that, like, that's a hoop that they can't go through, as opposed to just choosing a single option.
Mm-hmm. I think that that should also go into consideration if you're choosing to have a biological child, because what happens to your child if you are no longer here, and every day is a chance in which we're no longer here? It's kind of the same hoop, just you have to answer to someone rather than ethically answer to yourself.
Yeah, which then, that's true. Like, there's the ethical in terms of biological, and then there's the legal in terms of adoption. But Jen, just like in terms of what you're thinking, are you ever really and should you ever really parent alone? Which then, that's like, true. Makes me think about how we prioritize romantic relationships over other kinds of relationships. Because in theory, I think, like, whether you're partnered or not, your community should be helping you raise your child.
Mm-hmm. Like, definitely, I don't parent alone.
Yeah, even though you are a single parent.
Like, there have been many times where I've left Dave at Sam's house. Like,
my brother, child.
Like, there's a whole extended community in this bitch.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, a lot of what I read was, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. So, yeah, not relying on romantic relationships, relying on friends, relying on neighbors, relying on family to help you raise a child, because it is hard. It's difficult. It's almost impossible to raise a child completely by yourself and be able to support that child.
Yeah, like, even if you don't have a community, you're still like, the kid goes to school. Yes, so like, yeah. It's literally not happening alone.
Yes. There's always going to be some person, whether you like it or agree with their ideas or not, who will be helping you rear that child. Mm-hmm. So it's, but the romantic part of it, like, I personally, if I do this, I wouldn't want my partners until I feel comfortable to help me with my child. You know, I still would want to do that with myself, me and my family. And it's like, okay, if I feel like you are somebody that I want to stay with for the rest of my life, I will let you into my family. But I wouldn't want to rely on that person, because that's a big chunk of why I don't want to wait for another person.
And just, I guess, my only other point about adopting specifically, one of the reasons why I am choosing to be child-free personally is because I have ethical implications against having children in general for me. So I feel like if I were to ever actually raise a child, I would 100% adopt. So for me, when I see it, I'm just like, they're already here. And I've been very much like leading towards that. So that's just like the verses in terms of like ethics for me. But I can understand why people would have artificial pregnancies on their own versus adopting.
I also often think about it from that perspective. I don't know if that's like where I'm going to go definitely in my life. But I've also grappled with the, what does it mean to bring new life into a fucked up world? And like, whatever happens in November, I'm going to like seriously change just like my perspective and my trajectory in life, how I budget, where I think me as a parent will be in the future and all that kind of stuff. I don't remember the exact name of the episode, but I'm going to put a link in the show notes about something along the lines of this. It's from a podcast called Advice For and From the Future, which I mentioned on a previous episode. But they talk about whether or not I should have kids in the future, like if the future is going to be fucked up. And the expert who was interviewed on the show was like, you know, don't let the trajectory of the world make you feel guilty about having kids, because like, we're not like quote unquote resourceless or anything like that, because there's a lack of resources or because we're overpopulated or anything like that. We are quote unquote resourceless because of policy and how the world is shaped. So like, don't ever feel guilty about bringing a new life because you're taking away from other things. So that's a flip way to think about it. And then personally, like, if you just care about my personal opinions, my mom was adopted, so I've always kind of wanted to adopt for that reason. And somebody else who I used to be really, really close to was also adopted, and then also my aunt was adopted too. So I was always just like, legacy wise and heritage wise, I should adopt, which is interesting because like, biological is usually how you think about legacy and heritage. But that's something that I always thought that I wanted to do. But then my mom passed away and I started to think, like, if my brothers don't have kids, I don't want to be the last living legacy of her. So then I started to think, oh, I should also have I gotta adopt and I gotta have a biological baby just to keep this woman. Kids. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's two things that I've been considering.
My thoughts about, I don't like the word artificial pregnancy. I don't know why. I can't.
I was thinking if that was the proper term.
I feel like no. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Well, I mean, let's say artificial conception.
I think that when people think about having kids, it goes in this hierarchy of it has to be a biological kid. And then if not that, if we're thinking about adopting, it's, you know, more often than not an if talking from a U.S. based perspective, yeah, it is a child from a different country. And I feel like a part of that is a fallacy that there aren't 400 plus thousand children without parents and homes in the U.S. It's like this idea that we find in our backyard. So let me go over there and help this other child. Let me give them that opportunity. It's like, no, there's a lot of kids in our own backyards, you know, needing a meal, needing a family, needing love. And it goes in that hierarchy until we get to like fostering. And I feel like a lot of people see fostering as, myself too, problematic, and I'm trying to work through it, but sees fostering as a lack of responsibility, like I can get his kid back kind of thing, which is fucked up in its own sense. But yeah, I definitely do feel like there's a hierarchy when it comes to having children, raising children, that people go through when they think about extending their families or having their own families. Yeah. And I don't feel like it has to be that hierarchical kind of step.
Yeah.
And to piggyback off of that, it's unfortunate that there's also a stigma for adopted children in general. Like when I had ever mentioned it to certain people, not anybody that I respect, but to certain people, they were just kind of like, no, you'll see why. It's because they're just like, oh no, like I couldn't do that because that kid's most likely messed up, and like I don't want to have to deal with that. Like there's a stigma that they're automatically gonna come with their own host of problems, which they most likely will, because they're orphans, so there, or something else is happening that they probably were just lost, or thus their parents lost custody, or etc, etc. They have gone through something, unless they're an infant, that may, you know, have trauma, and they may carry that, but it doesn't mean that they're automatically like damaged goods, which I've heard, and I like kind of hate that, because it's just like, even for me, kind of makes me want to save them or like be a parent to them more, because I'm like, okay, if no one helps them and no one steps in, then they'll be a product of this system, and who knows what will happen, you know. But it's very much this stigma where it's just like, I want my own, because I don't know how this child may end up. I've heard that a lot of times, so it's just like, it kind of sucks, because adoption is never usually the first option. It's always like, okay, if I can't have my own children, or like as an a less than alternative than having your own biological child.
Even in that, you know, when we talk about people adopting, they go for babies. We're not adopting 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 5-year-olds, or 14-year-olds. You know, they want someone that they can mold from scratch. And that reminds me of the story that was going around about some white folks who kind of rehomed a child.
Oh my God.
Who they had from infancy, but because he had disabilities, you know. Just
gave him back.
I don't even like the word rehome, because you don't rehome children, you rehome pets. But like they, you know, had him placed with a different family. It's like, it's a gamble, even. You know, if this child is an infant, you know, and if this child is yours, you know, and we have to then kind of look at our biases, our, you know, our ableism and whatnot, and how that plays into our adoptions or ideas of, you know, whether we're having our biological kids or taking someone else's.
Right.
Taking someone else's. Or adopting. I'm sorry, child y'all. I'm
nabbing. Just taking someone else's.
Kidnapping. Like, I didn't mean kidnapping, y'all. Don't be taking other people's kids. Came out so wrong.
With the international adoption thing, and this is like for a whole nother episode, but I just want to acknowledge that there are ethical concerns there in general, where a lot of people feel like, you know, you are someone of privilege going into a country where people are less privileged, where they might get some monetary compensation or something like that if you do adopt this child. So are you like literally buying someone's kid, and like they're in a position where they can't say no because like the kid needs food to eat, they need help, and all those kinds of things. And then also, what are the implications of removing a child from their birth culture and putting like American cheeseburgers on them?
I actually read something about that recently where I believe the person was coming from Korea. I'm not like 100% certain, but regardless, it was a white family who adopted them from the US. And like they gave them their case file and like all of the information about their lineage, everything that this person may need to feel that connection to their past. and the family, they found out when they were older, but their new white family was like, oh no, like that's not their family anymore. They don't need this. And they essentially like destroyed the information. So this person has no way of even knowing this stuff because they just decided to sever it. And it was like a Reddit post where they were just like venting, saying like, I just feel so lost now because I found this out. And they said it in such a casual way, thinking that they did the right thing, but I have no way of knowing any of this stuff because they took that from me. Yeah.
I think that like, I love that episode of Akua where you were like, it doesn't have to be this way. Like, there's so much it has to be this way thinking that I fucking hate. And it's just like, if you would just bend a little bit, like, it reminds me of, like, why I hate monogamy. Like, it's either this or nothing. It's either you're my family or you're with your Korea family. Like, why couldn't it have been both?
It literally is because that person is still Korean. Like, there is still a heritage of theirs that they can't erase. Like, they're going to find it, whether it's a biological origin or they find their you know, their local library about Korean heritage. Like, they're going to connect with it either way. You cannot strip them of it.
Yeah.
Well, the next point I have was what makes a person ready to have a baby. So when I was considering becoming a single parent, I was looking at all of the parental relationships around me and realizing how many pregnancies were unplanned pregnancies where niggas just got pregnant and it just was what it was and they had a baby and everything was fine. Or everything wasn't fine, but the child became, what child was fine, they turned out fine or whatever. Like, it wasn't always a major thing, and then sometimes it was, but I only have one family member who like planned their family. Like, we're going to have a child this year, and then started trying to conceive that year, and then they conceived. And in thinking about what makes a person ready as far as becoming a single parent by choice, it's like, a lot of that is finance. Yeah, not just the finance of actually like raising a child, but the finance of starting the process to have do artificial conception. It's like, okay, is it like a person is ready if they have a house? Are they ready if they have space to have a child? What if you choose to become a single parent by choice, but you're not in that middle class tax bracket? You don't have a home of your own. You're renting an apartment and it's one bedroom. You know, like, would you be looked down upon because you weren't ready to have a child, but you chose to invest in having a child? So what do you guys think about, like, a person being ready to have a child?
I definitely think you'll be looked down upon societal-wise. I personally will not look down on you, or I'll try my best not to, because I've also been indoctrinated with those ideas. And I've definitely like said things like that. And I'm, why would you go ahead and have a baby? Which is like really fucked up. But just like big picturing it, because I don't really have an answer as to what's ready and what's not, because you literally might not be ready in terms of what you can provide for that child. But like, that's not the big picture onus is not on you. The big picture onus is like, why do we have countries and why are we in this country where someone might not be able to give their child everything that they need when one of their human rights is to have a child?
Yeah. I think for me, even in answering that question, I have to draw from the experience of growing up in a single parent household where none of us were planned. Me in particular, because I was the last one, like 10 years, and I was like the most like oops child out of everyone. There's something in even hearing that someone does plan or has this intention to want a child that I think it gives a lot of credit to choosing to be a single parent, because there's so many people who accidentally or unintentionally become single parents, and it's hard. Like, when you were reading all the things that like can eventually affect the child psychologically, there's such a major difference between, okay, I didn't want this, and like the child almost can sometimes feel like a burden, or all of these other things, like not having enough money, blah blah blah, as opposed to, I think there's like a magic in, I wanted to have this child, because it's so rare that like you might accept it because it's happened, but it's rare that people go into it with this intention of saying like, I'm gonna see when I'm ovulating and this, that, and the fourth. And I think that that's like, not that it makes it a step above, because at the end of the day, you do with what you have. So even if you didn't plan on having a child and it becomes something magical, that's fine. But I think there's like a step up to it or an advantage for both the parent and the child because they're planning it. So I don't know, it kind of makes it better than people who are accidental single parents, because this is from the perspective of somebody who grew up in that household and didn't feel... I felt very much every day that it was just like, this was not my intention and you're just here, so there's nothing that I can do. So, like, I'll have to figure it out. And I always felt like, okay, I didn't ask to be alive, but I'm sorry. Like, so, I don't know. There's, like, something good about intention. Even if it's an accident, even afterwards going, like, I'm going to do this and put my all into it, that's, like, better than just dealing with the circumstance, if that makes any sense.
I think that no one is ever ready to have a baby because we're not in a state... in this country, or I don't know about anybody else's country, to have all the ducks in a row that you would need, you know, to raise a child. One thing that we always think about, like, the occupational or the financial aspects, but one thing that I've been seeing in older couples who are family planning is coming to therapy because they don't want their generational baggage on their kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, ooh, look at y'all, refreshing as a motherfucker. But, mm-hmm. like, you know, some people don't even think that far ahead. It's just kind of like, do I have money? Do I have space? Can I buy them clothes? Will they eat? Mm. And it's like, all right, what about these other factors that go into a family? Are we thinking about our own mental health? Are we thinking about our support system in our community and what that looks like? Because all of that impacts our kids. Are we thinking about... kind of, and I'm going to share my mama business, but don't tell her I told y'all. You know, I was much like Rebecca, very unintended. And I know I was unintended because all of my siblings are 13 years older than I.
Yep.
My parents weren't together. My dad was in another relationship. And, you know, my mom had been in the U.S., as an undocumented person for, you know, a couple of years, like working towards that. So like having me when she was in a space, when she was really not in a space to financially provide for herself. Well, I don't want to say that, but, you know, to kind of have those roots, I guess, or that financial anchor, you know, played a part into that, played a part into, you know, into the way, into my upbringing. And so when we're thinking about ready, you know, whose framework of ready are we on? Because there's so many things to take into account that impacts, it impacts this growing person, mm-hmm. and what shapes their world. And there's so much that I feel like none of that will ever all be in a row to do anything. You know, they're, you know, there are people whose marriages are on the rock. Like, all of that cannot be together. If we waited for all of that to get together in our sociopolitical, economic landscape and the world as it is, nobody would be having children. Mm. There'd just be no way.
Have you unpacked your internalized misogyny before you have had a child?
Woof. Have you?
Woof. I also want to say, with my earlier point, because I just want to name it out loud, if we are saying, oh, you are not ready, not for the things that Akua said, which is a more all-encompassing approach, but if you are not ready because of finances or things like that, you're kind of being reproductively racist, because we are more likely to not have finances in a row if we are people of color, specifically Black people. And then, you know, you're even being like, maybe like transphobic, for example, because we're less likely to have all of our ducks in a row if we're trans or queer or things like that. So
thank you for all of your input. We spoke about this earlier, and it's actually a very important point. How do you structure a support system to ease the anxiety of something happening to you and you being unable to care for your child? For example, for me, of course, you know, I have my friends, but, you know, friends are finicky sometimes. And let's say I didn't have my friends, then who would I have? I do have two parents who are very awesome people. And my mother already told me that at least while I'm pregnant and for the first few months of after I give birth, she'll be in New York, but my parents will be living in Florida very soon. So if something were to happen to me, would they be able to fly back? Let's say fucking coronavirus shuts down fucking transportation. How would they get back and help me take care of this child if I have nobody else? I don't think that I would ever ask my brothers to even watch my child for an hour. So it does make me feel a bit nervous, because it's like, who can I call on a whim when I'm struggling with a depressive episode and having my baby here and nobody helping me is making it a lot worse, and I need somebody to tell me with this damn baby so I could just like go, I can take a walk. You know, you can't just take a walk if you have a child. You have to take the child with you. You can't just leave your baby in the house, even if it's for 5 minutes, because things happen. Like, okay, well, I know that there's support groups for single parents and single parents by choice, which was something that I would consider attending if I really follow through with this decision. And that is for ideas, because some of them are people who have been through it. And then also, I feel like meeting another single parent and you both having those same issues of, I don't have anybody to help me with my child at all. You guys, you know, you could all build a relationship where you help each other out. That community that you find instead of the community that you have. And really, prior to conceiving, really asking your friends, like, hey, if I do this, would you be able to help me? And what does help look like to you? What is a limit for you? Like, what is a boundary for you? And how sure are you that you can do this for me? Because at the end of the day, when you do it artificially, you are making a choice. You're making a very conscious choice to have a child. So with that, you can delay the choice if you want to, in certain situations, considering, you know, age and fertility. But you may be able to delay it until you are confident that if you were to die during childbirth, that there will be somebody to take your child, that your child wouldn't just automatically go into the foster care system, which would likely happen if you were somebody without a support system and you died during childbirth. So what do you guys think about structuring support systems?
I think there should be more, not more, but when we're talking about planning a family, I think there should be a lot of emphasis on making sure you have a support system, because that will not make or break, because I believe in people being tough and figuring it out regardless. But it's that old adage of like, it takes a village to raise a child. It's just, you need as many people as possible on board. And I think, like you were saying, vetting people and going like, look, this is a baby. This is not like, oh, can you help me on this project? This is like, as a friend, as a partner, if you eventually have one, or like family, how much can you realistically dedicate to if such and such happens? And that's like, I don't know, I'd spend more time on that than, well, even though you need a budget, I'd like really be sitting here making sure that I have at least, I don't know, 5 people to call on. Even if it's just like, I need to get on a Zoom call and say, yo, this baby, this was a lot. Because there's no way to know the emotional toll or anything until it's already happening. So just building that web and that net so that you can fall back on is probably one of the most important steps, if not the most important step, especially since you're not having a partner in, even though a partner may not be the end all be all, but you don't have that additional person who's just like, this is a co-parent. You have to build that web, and it's more important to me than anything.
That anxiety is something that I live with as an unintentional single parent. And I think it grows as my son gets older, which I think should be the opposite, but it really does grow as he gets older. And it's something that I think about sometimes, but then I spiral and then, you know, I stop because it's just too much. But like, definitely having a support. I remember when he was first born, the support system I had wasn't even the support system I thought I was going to have. It was like really brand new friends I had made like 3 months ago. Shout out to my bitches, because they still here. And they'll still babysit for a hoe. But yeah, like, you know, friends I've had for like, what, 3 months, 6 months at the beginning of my pregnancy, who were literally like picking my kid up from a daycare while I did extra classes to get out of high school. Then I go to their house and pick them up, and their parents allowing them to bring my child into their home, you know, because there were a lot of parents that had issues with me being a teen parent and a quote unquote bad influence on their child. And I'm like, your kids is already fucking. So I don't know what to tell you.
I'm proof.
But okay. I'm literally the proof, because a lot of people, a lot of my friends' parents thought I was the good one. I was like, well, the hoe in me says, you know. So yeah, the support system that I had, I hadn't planned for. They weren't the ones that I thought would be my support systems, but were really the people that stood up and showed out for me day after day, time after time. And I think about that now, like when I think about if something is to happen to me and my son is left behind, who would care for him? And it's still not my family. Like, it's still not the people I thought were going to be the primary, you know, the primary support group. And I feel like it's a conversation that I should have to see people, you know, if that is something that the people I imagine would step up would want to do, you know, and really plan that out. But again, you know, my anxiety, I want to feel like I'm going to live forever. So I just sit up. Because can't nobody handle the harsh reality sometimes.
I mean, it's realistic. We're literally in the middle of a pandemic. Even if it's slowing, even though it's not, but even if it's perceived as slowing, perceived as, oh, if you get sick once, you can't get sick again, all of these things that aren't inherently true, that you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to be one of the quote unquote healthy people, people who have no conditions, who actually passes away from the virus if you do get it. It's something that will always be in the back of your mind until a vaccine is approved and actually works and blah, blah, blah. And even then, still things happen. So I think that more now than ever, considering how we've seen people who were once here and are no longer here, more now than ever, I think it really is important. I mean, in general, to know, to think that who else can I rely on if something were to happen to me without a child? But then definitely, is there somebody I can rely on if I do have a child and something were to happen to me? If I were to be in the hospital intubated, can somebody take care of my child until I get better? And if I don't get better, can somebody raise my child for me instead of having my child bounce from home to home or end up in the foster care system?
Mm-hmm. Going off of your now more than ever, I think we are definitely in a now more than ever space, whether or not we get a vaccine for coronavirus quickly. It's just, and I'm an apocalyptic ass bitch, but I think now more than ever, you can see that my apocalyptic ass isms is like coming to fruition. Ideally, and this is not something that I've like ever talked to anybody about, except for like Akua's fantasy of the fucking cul-de-sac or whatever, but ideally, as the world becomes more polarized and scary and uncertain, child or not, I find myself leaning into the idea of a future where I have like an intentional, because like y'all are my community and I do have a greater community, but an intentional community that's clear on how we are taking care of each other in any sort of way going forward. And I think kids are a part of that.
And I want you guys to know, those who have children, those who choose to remain child-free, you can leave your children and your pets with me at all times. Call me.
What are you talking about? You talking about everybody who's listening?
No, you guys.
That's what, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure, wow. I wasn't sure who that pronoun that is for.
No, I was like, you four specifically.
Is this a new fucking specific business?
Because niggas will talk about you on stuff.
You said pets too, right?
Pets too. I'll be ready. Been,
like, I had a point in time where I had nobody help me out with these fucking dogs. And, you know, between the military and being a firefighter, sometimes I, like in the beginning, remember it was the beginning of the pandemic where I came out the academy and I didn't know that it was going to happen, but I went and straight started working 24-hour shifts. On my first day of the academy, you came and like you fed my dogs. And it's like something so little, but even though like they'd be all right if I leave for 24 hours now, but at the time, like I've never done that before. And Akua was like, I got you. Like no calls, no qualms, no nothing. Like, and I was like, I don't even have to really explain myself to you. That was the kind of support I really fucking needed. And that would be the kind of support that I would appreciate if I were to have a child. That at least I would have one person who I don't have to lay out all of the reasons why I need you to watch my child and can you do it. They'd just be like, I have the space to do it and I got you. That'd be like really comforting.
And it's it comes from being in that space, you know, being young, trying to go to school, trying to work, having a child, and really not knowing if I was gonna go to class because I didn't have childcare, you know. And it wasn't the time where there were those cute videos of people bringing their children to class and the professor holding them and shit. So like that wasn't even like a thought. It was like if I don't have someone to watch my child, I can't go to class. I can't go to work, you know. I empathize with that. And I'm here to do it for everybody. Pet, house, plants.
What kind of pet are you talking about? Because if I bring an anaconda over there,
Samantha,
you get an anaconda,
you and I will never speak again. I can't see you, bitch. Like, can I come to your home? No, I can't come to your home. I'm be out on the porch like, oh, hell. I know it's in there.
Like, you throw a mouse through the window. Like, yeah, gotta go catch it.
Mice.
But also, if it really came down to it, I'd suck it up and go, like, feed your anaconda some
all
mice.
Right,
like,
that's all I needed. I wouldn't ask you first, but that's all I needed. So is this conversation in this episode resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit? Is it helping you unlearn some old shit? Or is it just allowing you to have a good ass time? Ah, yes, yes.
It is.
You are saying that it is, and I love to hear it. We all love to hear it. Don't all hold your breath at once, you know, speak up. We would love for you to also support the continuation of conversations like these. So if you're listening to us on a podcast app, you can take a moment, get out your phone, get that out. Put it in your hand. Take a moment. Go to whatever app you're listening to us on. Open up that window. Subscribe to us. Click that subscribe button. Drop 5 stars. If you scroll down a little bit, you can do the little 5-star thing. You can then scroll down a little bit more and leave a rating for the homies. And it can be something as simple as, I love these Nakers. If you have some extra change, you can also drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho. Or you can come join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can just hit up your friend. Call them, text them, whatever, and say, yo, listen to this good-ass podcast. It's called Inner Ho Uprising. We thank and love you all for your continued support.
While we're talking about choosing to be a single parent, you know, that can be kind of tough for your mental health. And we're very serious about mental health here on Inner Ho Uprising. So is there something interfering with your happiness or it preventing you from achieving your goals? Right now, there's a lot of things.
The whole world says,
yeah. With that. I was about to say, everyone's just like screaming.
Of course,
right?
Duh. What the fuck?
So I personally turned to BetterHelp earlier on this year on the onset of the pandemic. My mind was going crazy and I just needed therapy, and I've been talking about it for a while. And I was going through a very rough time. I appreciated the convenience of messaging my therapist anytime during a week. Any musings that I had, I was just like sending it over. And I thought it was really cool that, I don't know if this was for everyone, but for my therapist in particular, they incorporated worksheets to help me with working on myself in between sessions. And I was asked thought-provoking questions that I feel I would have never explored certain avenues of self-care or even in my own mind had it not been for BetterHelp. So BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. However, it's not a crisis line, it's not a self-help, it is professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in some areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule a weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit the website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. So one review that was written by a BetterHelp user after counseling with Craig Coleman for 1 month on issues concerning depression, stress, anxiety, relationship issues, family conflicts, parenting issues, self-esteem, anger management, and ADHD. They said, he understands what I'm going through because he has some of the same experiences that I'm going through as well. And also he reveals issues and solutions that I was unaware of. Very similar to what I experienced as well. So you can visit betterhelp.com/IHU. That's better, H-E-L-P, to join over the 1 million people who have been taking charge of their mental health yourself with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Special offer for our IHU listeners. Again, you get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/IHU.
All righty, my niggers. So, considering that single parents by choice are usually in their late 30s and early 40s, I thought about what it looked like for me to be somebody who's 28 and considering doing this as early as, like, 30. And I'm like, okay, cool. I shouldn't care about what the world thinks in that way of people judging you because you're like young and you want to have a child and you want to do it by yourself. However, I can't act like this shit don't bother me. Like I'm a human. Like it does bother me, and sometimes it doesn't necessarily persuade me that I should just wait, but it does give me an idea of, oh, maybe I should just wait. Maybe I should just wait. I might meet this person next year. However, that part doesn't last that long because I meet another nigga and I'm like, fuck, I can't do that.
Next year, it's not looking like it.
Like every time I meet a guy, even if it's like a brief encounter, like it just more and more convinces me that, like,
that's mad for me.
It's so
niggas just walking down the block like, oh, I gotta get this IVF going because
this nigga here,
this ain't it. You, my friend, are not it. And he's like, what are you talking about?
just trying to walk down the block. No, like I'll, like anytime I like date somebody or even like simply just like hooking up with somebody, just seeing the kinds of men that I attract consistently, I'm like, I don't want to have a baby with any of these niggas. Not that I don't mind our situation happening, but I wouldn't want to rear a child with this person. And like, even like thinking about that at the age of 28, like, you know, maybe most of these single parents are in their late 30s, early 40s, because it probably took longer as a woman or somebody who's perceived to be a woman to climb up to a professional state where they make enough money to afford all of these treatments prior to 2000, let's say. And then now they're at an older age and they're here. I think that I am privileged to be in a position where by the time, like 5 years from now, I'll be making a bunch of money at my job. And maybe that is maybe a reason why I'm so comfortable with this idea, even though you don't know what the fuck is going to happen in a few years. But I'm still more comfortable with this idea because I have some kind of job security. But it still does cross my mind. Like, I am young. But then I'm like, but am I? Because how, like, I mean, like, in the sense of, like, maturity. Because when you're 22... versus 28, big fucking difference. 24 versus 28, for me, it's like a little different. But honestly, from 25 to now, my drive has been almost the same. I've matured, of course, because of experiences and me figuring out different ways to cope with things that I've gone through. But as far as major differences between who I was, and especially when it comes to impulse control, there really isn't like a large difference for me personally between who I was at 25 and who I am at 28, likely 29, maybe 30, besides the different experiences that I've had with people, with men, and with trauma. So that part gives me a little bit of comfort that who I am now, as far as the foundation of me, my morals, my character, I'll have that same foundation in my late 30s and early 40s. So if I'm comfortable financially and I can afford it, what would be the reason for me to wait? Especially as my parents are just only going to get older. We're talking about 10 years from now. They're not going to live forever. And I would appreciate the help while they're still able as well,
And while I at least have one grandparent who's still alive, none of my grandparents will ever, I mean, most of my grandparents will never see a child that I've had, even though they've wanted to. They've all passed away. So I at least got one nigga hanging on. And it'll be dope if I was able to have a child before it was their time as well. So yeah, what is that with age?
Yeah, I don't really think like the perception thing, the societal perception thing. I would just love for that to not be a factor. I want to remind everyone of floating rock theory and that nothing matters and there really are no rules, and that other people's rules are based in years and years of oppression, oppressive ideals and oppressive thinking structures. And that's like the only thing that says that you shouldn't right now, right? Like, it's like, you should right now if you're straight and you're married and you have all of these things that society yes. says that you should have before you have
that,
a child.
You can do that 20.
Exactly. You can just, yep. if you feel that you're ready and you've like assessed what you need to be ready and you have that, why the fuck not? Especially because there's these other factors that make you want to be even more ready. So like you have all the things, or you feel like you'll have all your ducks in a row that you feel comfortable making that step in 5 years. And there's the pressure of, oh, I want my parents to be able to help me. And I want my grandfather or who is it?
I'm my sorry. Grandma.
Grandparent, your grandmother to be able to like experience the life of this child. Those are like, it's all of that versus like, oh, you need to be in a nuclear family structure from yeah. people who are like fucking watching the world burn. Like people who are like protesting wearing a fucking mask.
True.
So like, yeah. fuck them.
Yeah. Honestly, as you were saying, I was just like, these are the same people who having two parents, having certain, like being white, all these things, like they don't guarantee anything other than society would be like, good job. Other than that, like,
and society is crumbling. So exactly. it's not doing a very good job. Like, so like, why should you do a good job according yeah. to societal quote unquote standards? Also, we live in a society. Hashtag.
We do.
I think, and I come from a different perspective because I unintentionally became a single parent. But I wholeheartedly considered being a single parent at 17. Like that was just, it was like, so if we gonna do this, we about to do this alone. Like, and that was a decision that I made with absolutely nan duck in a row. Like, just not one. Just, there was not a duck anywhere to be found. And again, like Samara or Deck are saying, it is, you know, it's a consideration, an analysis of what your ducks are and how pressing they are for you. Because society's going to look down on you regardless. They already do. Hell. And we here single and by ourselves. Like,
that's a fact.
Niggas out the womb. Having society
straight up
look down on you. I know that one thing that I do, and I really shouldn't do, but I'm a human and niggas have fallacies. I compare myself to my mother. I sometimes compare myself to her, not in like a combative way, but like, where was she when she was my age and where am I? And at my age, last year when I was 27, she had me. Her last child. I was also an oops baby, but my dad was fucking pissed, but my mom kept me and here we are. But I look at that and think, well, she had her first child at like 23 and, you know, she was okay. And then the second child, 25, and she was still okay. But I sometimes look back and like, maybe when I was younger, I would say I would want a child when I'm 23 as well. Because it seems like a good age, it, you know, worked out for my mother, and that shit just was not happening. And then I get this kind of anxiety, relationship anxiety, like a lot of I'm going to die alone anxiety. And I think it stems from the timeline of my mother. I didn't have a baby by the time I was 27. I'm not married. I'm not in a relationship. I'm not even really fucking right now. And she had it all at 27. But still, when I was born, it was a different fucking time. like, seriously, it was a different time. What they were paying for that house, I pay so much more in my rent for that, like, for my little fucking apartment. What they were making, it's different than what I'm making now. Because right now, I ain't making shit. But, you know, they were just in a very different space financially. Also, my mom had support from a person who was very driven, more driven than almost anybody I know, was my father. So it's like a relationship that is ideal, but it doesn't always happen. Even if you love the person, that ideal relationship doesn't always happen. So me comparing myself to her when I'm not in her position and I haven't done the things that she's done, and also I don't have the light skin privilege that she does, it's an uneven playing ground that I can't necessarily put myself in, because the fields are completely different. So I gotta like step out of that and go, okay, cool, in the year of our Lord 2020 is the only thing I could base anything off of, and still there are no expectations. Because expectations, as you said, they come from white patriarchal standards. There's nothing. There's people who are end up being mothers at the age of 14, and it just is what it is. Sometimes you can't say there's something that's better or there's something that's worse. Just shit be happening or shit be planned, and shit just be going. So I'm about to just be shit rolling down the hill.
Not the shit rolling down the hill, bro.
It's an interesting visual.
My next point was like, is there a point where you think you're too young to think of a scenario of child rearing without a partner? But, you know, as you said, Akua, like you thought of it at 17. And I think that that is something that I thought of when I was 19. I was pregnant with twins. And I was like, okay, if I have these babies, I'm going to be doing it alone, but there's two babies. I'm like, that's a lot of fucking responsibility for
that's
one.
That's a lot of babies.
That's a lot of babies. There's one more baby than I really want right now. I'm like, there's going to be two kids.
I'm like, two?
Two kids. Sometimes you don't even know that you're going to have two kids. You can just suddenly have two kids. You can suddenly have three kids. I could have fucking had triplets. I don't fucking know.
Just chilling back there.
And then I would have been by myself. I would not have, definitely would not have been my partner. I would be surprised if he even would have offered monetary support. And me considering being a single parent of multiple children at once at the age of 19, it wasn't something that I felt like I would be able to do. And I didn't want to bring a child, if I had the choice. Some people don't have the choice, but I definitely did have the choice, and I had access to abortions. And like, if I have the choice, I would rather bring a child into a world where I'm not going to be fucking poor. Because my parents I lived in their house and I didn't have a job. I was just kind of living my life for a few years. So like, what's going to happen if I have this child? Now I'm going to have to try to find a job pregnant with two motherfuckers? And then like, that's a lot going on. I'll pose the question. You could answer it if you have an answer, but do you think that there's a scenario where you're too young to think about being a single parent?
The first time I had to consider it was the one and only time that I was pregnant, and I was 17 years old. And it was just like, I was fortunate in the fact that like, not fortunate, because actually I ended up having an abortion and I was the only person in my family that wanted me to get one. Everyone had came up on their own and was like, I've done this in the past and you're gonna regret it. I will take care of this child. And like, I was fortunate that everyone was just like, I'm gonna do it for you. And then I was still like, I have to think about myself and what I was capable of emotionally and the situation that I would be bringing my child into. This one was like a very volatile one, and I found out some really bad news while I was pregnant, and it kind of persuaded me to not have the child with this person, just because they were just, the idea of having a child with this person would not have been pleasant. So I definitely had to consider it. And there's so many options that go into it. And even at 17, I did consider my age, but it never felt like it's because I'm too young. It was just like, there's so many factors that are coming into play that just make this an unideal environment, even though I had the support. So at that age, I would have been technically fine because I had that community. But I was just like, nah, I can't, because of so many other factors. So I don't think it's ever too young, especially if it's already happening. Like, if you're having sex and these things are happening and it just, you find out, like, there's so many things. And my mother had her first child at 15. So, like, for her, she did it and she kept going. So I don't know. I mean, I guess there's, like, the societal too young, like we always say. But when it's happening, that's when you have to be that adult and be mature. And that's when, you know, age kind of falls to the wayside and just like, can I do this no matter what my situation is? So I don't think these are too young. If you're pregnant or if you're of a child rearing age, that's when you can start considering what will happen if I have a child.
It's like, if you are having sex so you can get pregnant, why not also consider, if I were to get pregnant, what would I do? And that's the really the question. Not, I mean, a part of it is, can I be a single parent? But the core of the question is, what would I do if I get pregnant? Would I have this child or won't I have this child? If, and do I have access to not have a child? Like, if I can't use my insurance because my parents will literally kill me, would I be able to afford an abortion? Because them shits ain't fucking cheap. So one difference is the obvious great length and monetary commitment that one who chooses to be a single parent takes on to get pregnant without a partner. And the baby could be more wanted than a baby that kind of just happened. So it's like, do you think that would alter you personally the way that you raise your child if you were to completely plan a pregnancy and then get pregnant versus getting pregnant and becoming a single parent unintentionally?
I think I touched on that a little bit earlier, but just to like kind of wrap it up in a neater bow, I personally know, or well, I feel like it can have a better effect with the intention of having a child, just because I spoke from personal experience. I knew that I wasn't necessarily planned or really wanted, and it was very felt, and something that as an adult, I've been able to just kind of get over because I realized that shit happened, so whatever. But for a lot of people, that could just feel shitty. It's the same thing as like when people find out that like one of their siblings were planned and the other one wasn't. Like, there's like this feeling of wanting, and somebody who takes the time out and plans things and, you know, I want you here. I loved you before you even came here, blah, 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 blah. That's not inherent with like planning. And there's definitely people who have had accidental babies or like just like oops babies, and they put their all in and they love them just as much as they would as if they planned it. I don't think that's inherent whatsoever, but I definitely think there's like a magic to planning a child and something that's just the intention and moving forward and knowing that this is what you want and you'll put everything into it. I think that's like something that a child would appreciate and feel, especially if you emphasize that, like, look, it didn't matter what happened. I wanted you. You're here. I love you. Doesn't matter who else is here. This was always my plan. That can definitely be something that would be beneficial for a child.
I think this is, I don't know if this is what you were getting at with what you just said, but it's what I took from when you talked about this earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
And I don't think it necessarily has to be intention from get, but raising a child intentionally. Is what,
yes,
really,
and that's what I think, that's what I'm saying, uh-huh, because I'm trying to tie the two of them together because I don't want it to be like exclusive to,
yeah,
whether
your conception was planned or unplanned.
Exactly.
Even if, yes, your conception was planned, a year in you could be like, this nigga is getting on my motherfucking, yes, nerves, and then the intentionality like can go away. So like, as long,
exactly,
as it's like consistent intentionality throughout the rest of your,
that's
life,
exactly,
and that
I'm
child's life,
yeah,
like that is going to be beneficial to y'all's relationship in general, the child becoming a person, becoming an adult, and all those kinds of things.
Yep.
I have a bit of brain fog, so I barely followed that.
But when I said this nigga's getting on my motherfucking nerves, he kind of perked up.
She perked up like, wait a minute. And that's, you getting on my, can we talk about me now? What's up?
That's what I'm going to add in that. My son wasn't planned, and I think back then I really thought that I wanted to be a parent, and then I had him and realized that parenthood ain't for this one over here. Ain't
yeah,
for
me. A lot.
Like,
that's real.
This it. Like, yeah. And I clearly remember, you know, like being younger and like thinking I was gonna have this giant family. I wanted like 6 kids. Like,
so did I.
And you know, I tend to be, yeah, very mothering. And, you know, nurturing, and I am good with babies, but no, hell the fuck no. So, no more, not after this one. I'm done. We 7 years out the gate.
You better be quiet. He's going to be over there talking about, where's my sister?
Like, wait a minute.
He's already like, yo, so he has names for his siblings. I'm like, you better take that to your daddy because It's not happening here. So I don't remember where I was going with that. I guess I just wanted to share that. I don't.
But you are still like, so there was intention when you were 17. And then after that, you were like, I don't want to fucking be a parent ever again. But you're still very intentional yeah. about the way that you raise him.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's like never felt for him. I doubt unless he's listening now, you know, he would know.
Just sitting against the door in a tear.
Yeah. Single tear shed. How come we don't want me, man?
And no, I definitely do want him. Like, you know, I want, but yeah. I don't want no more. Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. You know, so though his conception and his pregnancy was not planned, there is an intentionality in, you know, loving your children, you know, and that not being something that they have to feel or carry, because again, they didn't ask to be born. They wasn't asked. They didn't pop up and say, yo, can you do me a favor?
Do me a solid, bro.
Push me out real quick.
And hold me for a good 18 years. Like, no.
Just hold me down.
Hold me down. You like 10 toes or not. Bro. Like, no.
I think it's important also just like to remember that there's no cookie cutter way of like, it'll fluctuate. There'll be times that you're like, I'm so ready for this. And then I'm speaking this because almost all of my siblings have children and we have really real conversations where they're just like, yo, cause I talk to them about like, I want to be child free or whatever. And they're like, if your reasons are because another reason is because I just feel like I'm going to mess up. I just feel like I'm gonna mess up. And but that's what they always say. Like, you are going to mess up. Like, it's because you're human and you're raising another human. And there's no way that you're going to be able to like get everything right because you literally cannot prepare for everything. And I think that's important to remember, even when you're talking about intention. Even if you're like, I want to do this, it could be 3 months and then all of a sudden, 3 months into your pregnancy and you're the most nauseous you've ever been and you're vomiting. I remember for me, like throwing up was, nothing went down. And I was just like, you can't prepare for that. And all of a sudden you're having your doubts and you feel guilty and da 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 da. I think it's like Sam says, there's like this continuing of going back to your intentions and feeling like, you know, it may not be perfect, but this is what I want. I still love this person, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, it's going to be in flux constantly. And there's no way to say that for sure you'll always feel this intention and always feel like this is what I want. This is what I want. But emphasizing the love, I think that's the most important thing because that's felt. And people know that other people make mistakes and they'll figure that out. But knowing that you're loved and knowing that you're wanted is important.
To wrap it up.
Wrap that shit up, B.
Wrap it up. Wrap it up. I do want to say thank you for all of your input. It's helping inform my decision. I'm definitely going to end up doing this shit. And I think that I would do it. I think at this point, I'd do it whether or not I was in a relationship. And if that's something that you couldn't get jiggy with, then you gotta
not
go
for me, man.
And I'm like, you know, it's okay. It's okay to do it alone. And I know it's scary to choose to do it alone. There's a lot of anxiety that goes into that and a lot of anxiety that goes into knowing that this is something that I'd have to introduce to a potential partner. Like, I have a baby that I chose to have, as opposed to just getting pregnant by someone. Like, I would want them to know because I would want my child to know. I want everybody to know that this is something that I planned because I don't want it to be a mystery or anything like that, especially with somebody that I plan on being with for the rest of my life. So I'm like, you know, got to get comfortable with that idea of introducing that and being aware that that might not be okay for some men that I meet, but then it's like, those also aren't the niggas for you.
Yeah.
Like, those also aren't, they're not it if they can't.
Because what a weird thing to not be on board for.
Yeah. But you know they won't be.
No, yeah. And niggas weird. Like, that's the that's the answer to that.
Niggas be nigga in. Like,
makers be nakering, actually.
Makers be
I believe that's the
like, facts.
they be nakering like a motherfucker. Like, I absolutely know for a fact, especially because I've introduced this to people, to men who I maybe had a thought cross my mind to, like, have sex with them. Like, a little baby thought or something. And then the responses I would get would be, like, fucking borderline violent. There was this one guy that I went to the academy with, and he was a Black man raised by a single mother, unintentional single mother. I'm not sure whether or not he knew his father, whether or not he even fucked with his father, but he was raised by his mother solely, but was active in the church and had a lot of relationships with men in the church. And he said that that helped him become a man, or shaped his idea of what he felt like, basically what he wanted to emulate. He found men in the church to emulate masculinity. Which is fair. If you don't have a male figure in your life, you're going to find one if that's something that you want to understand, like masculinity. But like, why would I do that? Knowing that I'll be raising a child without a male figure, how would he know how to be a man? Kind of thing.
Like, didn't you learn? Like,
but he had the quote unquote church man. But also, I mean, I think the actual issue here is like poor perceptions of gender and what that means. Like, that's the root of it. Not like, oh, men without fathers are gonna grow up astray or something like that. It's just like, niggas really just don't even understand like gender or how that comes into play.
Exactly. Like, a child will just grow up and be who they are.
Right. Like, did you have an agender parent, Rob? Did you teach you how to be agender? Or like, as a woman, like, am I the same kind of woman in terms of femininity that my mom is? No.
No.
It just happens.
You become who you are based on who you feel you are intrinsically, and then how you interact with the environment.
Right.
And things that you see, things that you like, things that you don't like. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, I thought about it for like a split second. And I was like, nah, that's not a thought that's valid, because there are so many cis men raised by cis women who identify as men.
Right.
And did not have positive or any solidified male figures in their life, and here they are being what they believe a man is, because they've still found in their society, because it's not like niggas don't go to school.
Exactly.
Just like we said, like, it takes a village to raise a child, and the village ends up raising your child regardless if you like it or not. It's not like there ain't no men at school, ain't no men if they were to play sports or do any kind of extracurricular activity, ain't no men ever.
There's men on TV, and there's a lot of people who model that. Everybody loves Uncle Phil for a reason.
Yes. Uncle Phil, rest in peace.
There's definitely men in music. There's men in media. There's going to be male writers, male authors that they'll read. Like, it's not like there...
It's actually too much men.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, right?
Like, they're everywhere.
But you have the exposure. It's not like the exposure is impossible. And it's also not as if them meeting men and becoming close to men, developing close masculine relationship, will make a difference. It might help. I think that for me, having my father help me have an idea of what I felt like a man was when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But then that also informed my gender identity, like, as far as me thinking about who I am in society, how people view men, how people view women, and how I view myself as neither. But I think that I probably would have came to that conclusion regardless, because I've been like this shit since out the womb. I don't think that it was necessary. It may have helped inform, but I don't think it was necessary. I think I would have been informed regardless. And I think that his reaction was violent, considering where he came from and how strong he felt, like how strongly he was opposed to me deciding to have a child by myself. It was almost as if he was my boyfriend, how strongly he reacted. He was fucking, like, almost angry that was something I was even considering. And it really made me sad, because I'm like, you know, this is a, this is my life and it's not your life, and I don't understand. Like, as we always want to keep in mind that we don't want to tell people what to do with their bodies, that's also a part of it. Rearing your child is doing something with your body.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just like you wouldn't tell somebody who's pregnant, don't go to the gym. You shouldn't be lifting no fucking weight, or don't be drinking no coffee.
They still do it anyway.
They sure do.
How about they sure,
motherfucker? I mean,
people are loving to police women's
bodies. That's what I mean when I say we. I mean, we as in my community and the people that I keep myself around, we don't do those things. And I also inform other people to not do those things. And I know that we as a group would not have an issue of person having a child, regardless of what brand of child that they end up having, if they do it alone. But that's not how the world views it. And I think that really, it does have to be considered in a way that, you know, you have to know what's, how do I put this? Understand the implications of doing it as well. Like, there's nothing wrong with it, but know that people will find something wrong with it. And I think that as a Black person, especially one who's trans, I am, you know, that's not something that's new to me. Having to explain a concept that people have never heard before and accepting that people are so dumbfounded by it that they don't like it for whatever reason, and me having to go, I don't give a fuck, that, you know, I think that that would help me navigating the world choosing something like this. But if it's a person who hasn't experienced those kinds of hardships, that know that that's something that you will end up experiencing. People opposing something that has nothing to fucking do with them, and understanding that you'll probably need an outlet when those things stop happening. Somebody to talk to, a therapist, find, you know, books, because there are books on, you know, choosing to be a single parent, you know, those support groups, doing your own personal research so you have that confidence within yourself that you don't waver when people start introducing their own like silly ass ideals to you. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Well, thank you for allowing us to hold this space as you think about a really big life decision. And thank you for introducing these thoughts and concepts to us three right here, and then also like the greater us who's listening, because I'm sure like that helps jog people's thoughts about all kinds of things, whether it be literally choosing to be a single parent or anything in the realm of parenting and just like future building, you know? A very future forward episode. Budgeting, right. Parenting, nootropics.
We out here. I'm so glad that I've made you a convert, so I don't seem like
I'm
going to
be Rodeca at the end of the year. When that fucking cyberpunk video game comes out, I'm just going to assume your fucking identity, nigga. Yesterday, your boyfriend was practicing tennis next to me
borough. That is true.
I'm about to be Rodeca.
All right.
Two out here.
I'm just going to disappear.
No, there'll just be two of us. It'll be fine.
Well, people already think we're the same person for
That's
some reason.
That's also true and odd.
So,
you know, things come to fruition sometimes.
There you go. Well, if this episode made you think, made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, helped you consider your future in ways that you had not yet considered, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes and that we appreciate every single last one of yous.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Innerhole Uprising without the G on Twitter, Innerhole Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Innerhole Uprising, CUMMUNITY. Head to innerholeuprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Pay a Ho, or to check out our merchandise. And if you would like to follow me, Rodeca, you can at The Darkest Timeline on Instagram and Exist in Crisis on Twitter.
And if you
would, you guys,
let's fight.
Jinx!
To death.
Start yelling. You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram.
And if you would like to follow me, I am V_body on Twitter. Oh, and
Noise.
Damn, I forgot my OnlyFans again.
It's in the show notes. Rob's OnlyFans is in the show notes. help to raise Rob's child.
That's it.
Yeah, man. Shit.
That's community building. Right, takes a village. Give Rob some fucking money, niggas. You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, where you can see things like my cosplay, me canning pickles for no motherfucking reason other than the fact that I enjoy it, and other fun things that I do there. And you can follow Carmen San Diego also on Instagram for travel photos when traveling is like safe again. And thank you very much, and have a great week.
Bye. Bye.